ॐ जननीं शारदां देवीं रामकृष्णं जगद्गुरुं पादपद्मे तयोः श्रित्वा प्रणमामि मुहुर्मुहुः। ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः। ॐ
ॐ मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट अस बोथ। May Brahman bestow upon us both the fruit of knowledge. May we both obtain the energy to acquire knowledge. May what we both study reveal the truth. May we cherish no ill feeling toward each other. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all.
In our last class, we completed the fifth kosha, Anandamaya kosha. With that, all the five koshas are completely over. In this Anandamaya kosha, we have to remember until Anandamaya kosha. That means from Annamaya kosha to Vijnanamaya kosha, all the five parts, the head, right hand or right wing, left wing, the back supporting and that which is at the bottom, the tail, puccham, or the legs, five parts have been described. But we have to distinguish, when we come to this Anandamaya kosha, Priya, that is the head, Moda, right hand or right wing, and Pramoda, left hand or left wing, they alone constitute the Anandamaya kosha. And just like kosha means a sheath is separate from what is inside it. A container is always separate from what is contained. So Atman or Brahman is beyond all these koshas. But since a kosha means a covering, all these coverings until now are covering up as it were Brahman or Atman. And therefore we are not able to understand at whatever state of consciousness we are. Body consciousness, prana consciousness, mind consciousness, intellect consciousness or bliss consciousness. We are identifying with that. But when we reach the Anandamaya kosha, we discover there is something beyond. And that is the root cause. Everything is temporary, changing, limited, not independent, controlled by something else. Just a reminder only. We have discussed elaborately many times. For example, pranamaya is interior, subtler, more pervasive and controls annamaya kosha. And annamaya kosha is the controlled. Similarly, pranamaya is controlled by what is interior to it, which is manomaya, which is controlled by what is interior to this mind, which is called intellect, decisive factor, and that is controlled by ananda. Everything is controlled, our whole life is controlled by ananda or bliss. That's why he said, every action that we do, either for dukkha nivruti or sukha prapti, either to remove unhappiness or to obtain bliss, happiness. This is the behind every activity, whether we breathe or not. So, why even Anandamaya is a kosha, not a Brahman? So, the original Ananda, Anandamaya, Maya in Sanskrit language, it means quantity. So certain quantity of prana, certain quantity of thoughts, certain quantity of intellect, understanding, and certain quantity of bliss. It is dependent, it is temporary, and it never fulfills. How do we know? Because once our ananda, bliss, becomes permanent, there is no spiritual life, secular life, there is no effort to gain something. Pure knowledge, I am Atman, I am Brahman. That fact is indicated, Atma is the support and Brahman is the Puccham or the origin. Indicating Atma and Brahman are not separate factors but only factor. So when we exclude Priya, Moda, Pramoda, joy, greater joy, greatest joy, and that is dependent upon Atmananda or unbroken bliss of the self. And the Upanishad clearly wants to indicate Atman is not separate from Brahman. When we are thinking, we call it Atman. When we go beyond thinking, its name is Brahman. We cannot really, we don't call it. So, original Ananda is not to be experienced. It is non-fluctuating, ever-present. Therefore, it is the support. So, here a question comes, very profound question. We must have that intellect. Can I experience Brahman? No. The very definition of experience is, I am separate, an object is separate. When we come together, and if everything is right, the light, sense organs, no obstruction, then that object is experienced. So, an experience always indicates duality. When I become one with Brahman, I don't experience Brahman. I claim I am Brahman. Of course, we have to think over it. Then only we can understand. So that is, what is that state? Simply, Aham Brahma Asmi, I am Brahman. But this is also, even to say, to describe that state of Brahman, that state of Samadhi, is where I feel that I am Brahman, is also duality. Because it is the thought in a mind, it is an expression through the mouth. And whatever is measured, contained in the mind, that is nothing but finite, limited. So this Anuvaka concludes by stating that there is a final mantra will follow to reinforce this supreme teaching. What is that final mantra? It reveals the highest truth about Brahman. With this, Panchakosha Viveka is complete. Until now, the Upanishad, Taittiriya Upanishad, Brahmanandavalli, from Anuvaka 1 to this Anuvaka 5. Upanishad has guided the seeker, sadhaka, to identify first with each kosha, beginning with the grossest, which is called Annamaya Kosha, and then do spiritual practice. So we really identify it with Brahman, which we are not doing at the moment, but through contemplation, maybe for many, many lives, we come to know even this body is nothing but manifestation of Brahman with the grossest form and name. And when we succeed in this contemplation, we perceive there is something which is more subtle, more pervasive, controller of this Annamaya Kosha, then we enter into Pranamaya Kosha. Thus we continue contemplating every kosha as a manifestation of Brahman. And once we succeed with each particular kosha, then the innermost kosha will reveal itself, and then we step, as it were, from the ground floor to the first floor, from first floor to the second floor, as to any measure to understand it properly, until we reach Anandamaya Kosha. One definite proof that Anandamaya is also a kosha is that it comes and goes, just as Annamaya Kosha comes and goes. pranamaya kosha, etc., come and go. How do we know? Because when we are focused upon prana, energy, I am enthusiastic, I am dull, then our identity is more on pranamaya kosha. When my mind is whirling with irrepressible, uncontrollable thoughts which are running all the time, we know we are identified with the manomaya kosha. After thinking deeply, coming to a decision, we would like to pursue it. Then we know we are identified with vijnanamaya kosha. But all these koshas are like servants, working as it were, for fulfilling the desire of every jivatma, every living creature. I want to live, I want to know, and I want to be happy. So that is ananda alone determines. If some prani is not happy and knows that I have no hope of even future happiness, then that person would like to give up this body. That is seen at all times. How do we see it? So, we use a particular word, boredom. So, when we are hungry, we have to eat food. But when we are bored, also we eat food. Or we flicker a book. Mind is not able to concentrate. Or we want to watch something. Go on changing the scenes or channels. So like that we go on and on and on. So that is how we know that we are not happy. But if we are happy, like in deep sleep, time is forgotten, objects are forgotten, space is forgotten, the whole universe is forgotten. But even that is limited. It is the most pervasive, no doubt, but that is also limited because we wake up. In fact, deep sleep alone wakes us up. There is no doubt about it. So this is a process of analyzing what are the panchakoshas, sacralize them, look upon the body not as my body, but as Brahman itself. That is called sanctifying, sacralizing, purifying, making it sacred. Every samskara is meant only for this sacralizing process. That is why when a Christian baby is baptized, it is like a Brahmin boy entering into the second stage of life called twice born with a sacred thread. Sacred thread is a symbol. I must lead a sacred life. I must make my body and mind sacred, which means I must approximate it with God. That is what it really means. But just like we cannot reach the roof with one jump, so slowly from the ground to the first, from first to the second floor until we reach the roof. Once we reach the roof, that's what Sri Ramakrishna's words, then we know every floor is made up of the same material. Until we reach the roof, that knowledge, however much we study in the scriptures, will not become a fact. Then only we know. This is the process. It is for spiritual progress. And if we sincerely do it, by the grace of God, we reach God, then we understand Brahman is Satyam, Jnanam, Anantam, and I am that Satyam, Jnanam, Anantam, Brahma. This is the essence of what we discussed, and that includes the last kosha, Anandamaya kosha. Now we are entering into the sixth section, sixth Anuvaka. Until now, this Taittiriya Upanishad, especially the second chapter called Brahmanandavalli, is guiding all of us. How to identify with the outermost kosha called Annamaya, make it sacred, become purified, see it as a manifestation of Brahman, not as me, but as manifestation of Brahman. And when we succeed in it, our eyes will open to the next subtler kosha. Then we identify with the still subtler koshas. Then the outermost koshas becomes mithya or limited Brahman. Mithya should not bring to our mind, it is non-existent, it is false. No, we already contemplated upon it as truth, satyam, as Brahman, but limited Brahman. So limited Brahman, dependent Brahman is called mithya or anatma. That is how slowly we go deeper and deeper, subtler and subtler, more and more pervasive, until we reach Anandamaya. And when once we reach Anandamaya, the mind becomes extraordinarily clear, pure, capable of perceiving. Now comes the final transformation. There is a analogy given, like a moth which sees brilliant fire and wants to immolate itself by jumping into it. So once the jivatma identifies itself with Anandamaya kosha and it immediately perceives, it cannot wait anymore. It wants to jump into, as it were, into the Brahman, like a moth, as it were, into the fire. Such is the attraction, like a magnetic hill, completely pulling the ship with all the iron things that are there and make it its own. Just as a magnet hill pulls it, Brahman, when we become identified, pulls us, as it were, and cannot bear that separation. Only when a person reaches, what happens? This Anandamaya kosha, a person's discrimination, his understanding becomes so pure, as if he is seeing a brilliant light. And here Sri Ramakrishna says, only a thin layer of glass is the obstruction. The sadhaka doesn't realize there is an obstruction. But like the moth, this living creature breaks open that obstructing thin glass and becomes completely merged in the Paramatma. Jivatma becomes one in the Sahasrara with Paramatma and says, Shivoham Shivoham Mano Buddhi Ahankara Chitta Ninaham Shivoham Shivoham. This is the essence of what we discussed. Now the Upanishad is leading us into the sixth Anuvaka or section 6 of the second chapter of the Taittiriya Upanishad called Brahmanandavalli. What does this section 6 wants to tell? As usual, I would like to introduce the essential points, all the essential points discussed in the sixth section, so that it becomes easier for us. Otherwise, it will be very difficult. Suddenly, as if we entered from one dark room into another darker room. So in this sixth section, the Upanishad, that means the Rishi, we do not know. Probably we know that Rishi. So that Rishi is instructing his students, pupils, sishyas, that ultimately, my children, Brahman is one and Brahman is the source of this creation. That clarifies one particular point. We are already in the creation, as part of the creation. So if we are asked, who are you? I am the son of so-and-so, daughter of so-and-so. My parents are these. But no, the whole universe is nothing but Brahman. You are that Brahman. Therefore, you are the universe. Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. That is the highest realization. And this section 6 gives 7 powerful reasons to prove the existence of Brahman, or we can say God. So, there is an implied question here. Does really God exist? You are talking all the time about Brahman, about God. And God realization is the only goal of life. Not one of the goals of life, but only goal of life. So Brahma asti va na va. Is Brahman existent or not? This is the foundational question. Implied by whom? By the students who have been taken through all those 5 sections in the second chapter of the Taittiriya Upanishad called Brahmanandavalli. So, but it begins in a particular way. Sir, So far as I understand or we understand what you have been teaching from the very beginning, including a first chapter called Shikshavalli, we have a doubt. You say everything is Brahman. If everything is Brahman, here are two persons. So one is you, another is me. You are my teacher and you are a God-realized soul. I am a student. I am not a God-realized soul. And therefore, after death what happens? If what you say is correct, then after your death, of course you will attain Brahman because you are a knower of Brahman. But since everything is Brahman, I am also Brahman whether I know it or not. So is it not reasonable to say that I also, that means an ignorant person also, become after death one with Brahman? This is the question. Does an ignorant person attain Brahman after death? Or does a wise person attain Brahman after death? Very, very clever question. No doubt about it. We have to question ourselves. If I am from God, then I am God, whether I know it or not. Gold is gold, whether a person knows it or not. So these two questions lead now to one hidden question, third question. What is the third question? The questions are put by the pupils, students, are only two. Does a wise person after death attain Brahman or not? Does an ignorant person, Ajnani, become one with Brahman or not? And that indicates what is the proof that God exists at all. So, seven powerful answers through arguments are given in this sixth Anuvaka to prove the existence of Brahman. And briefly, we will go through that. First, argument number one, Brahman exists as the intelligent cause, Nimitta Karanam. Long back I was reading the history of the Western philosophy. One of the things that I still remember, this is the proof for the existence of God. Supposing you see a book written, beautiful book, maybe Shakespeare's drama or poetry. You know that he was also a great poet. Most people don't understand. They remember him only as a writer of dramas. But no, he was a very, very powerful, great poet. Shakespeare's poems like Shelley, Wordsworth, Longfellow, etc. So, what is that I have read? Supposing there is a clock and it is beautifully running. What does this clock prove? That there must be a person who created the clock. Because the clock, all the materials in the clock do not assemble. They come from different directions purposefully. And because purpose is necessary, intelligence is necessary, which part goes or attached to which other part, then only the clock will function. When we see a beautiful book written, beautiful poem written, when we see a beautiful clock running so beautifully, naturally that proves this is a creation. There must be a creator. So if I am existing because of my parents, because there was a time I was not existing, so then I was born. How was I born? Because of my parents, from my mother. So that actually implies two things. Not only the original cause, because anything that is born is called an effect, karya. Every karya must have a cause. And all the causes are generally divided into two, but we can also add, make it as three. Without these three causes, it's impossible to create anything. For example, a pot, a clay pot. So, if you see a clay pot, you have to imagine three causes. First cause is an intelligent person. So, there must be a potter, very intelligent, and he is called intelligent cause, Nimitta Karanam. Then there must be a material cause. The intelligent cause is different in this world. Material cause is different. So the material cause is the material. Gold doesn't think for itself and become an ornament. It must be thought about, designed, and somebody has to do something with it in a particular way. Process is there, and that person is called an intelligent person. But however intelligent a person is, he cannot create unless the raw material is available. That raw material is called upadana karanam. And many times, both these will not do. In fact, in practically every production, another thing is necessary. Say, for example, if a sculptor wants to make an image, then there must be either marble or metal or clay, as we do just before Durga Puja. Hundreds of thousands of different sized images of Mother Durga with thousands of faces. So there must be material cause, and material cause itself will not assemble. It must be assembled by a intelligent cause. The intelligent cause is called Nimitta Karana. Karana means cause. And the material cause is called Upadana Karana. Without which the karya will not be there. Effect will not be there. Without clay, pot will not be there. Without gold, ornament will not be there. But very often, in fact, invariably, an instrument is necessary to facilitate. If nothing is there, hand should be there. But there may be a wheeler, a wheel, potter's wheel we call it. Or if goldsmith has got, he must have a mould. So he melts the gold and pours it and then goes on finally removing any misshapes, etc., extra material, etc., and polishes it. So this is called karana. Karana, 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 karana. Ka is hrasva. Ka is dirgha. Instrumental necessity. So an intelligent cause, a material cause, and an instrumental cause. All the three are necessary. So when we see the creation, any part of the creation, it could be a tree, it could be a mountain, it could be a mosquito, it can be mice, it doesn't matter. Since it is a product, it has not created itself. So Mount Everest did not think, I want to become Mount Everest, and it became itself Mount Everest. Somebody has created. This is a very popular argument. The creation indicates a creator. And when we say creator, we have to take these three. If nothing else is there, in the case of God, his intelligence is the instrumental cause. Not only what he wants to create, but how he wants to create. So it is said, Brahman is all the three combined into one. He is the Nimitta Karana. He is the Upadana Karana. He is the instrumental cause called Karana Karana. And the example of a spider is given in the many Upanishads, in the Mundaka Upanishad. A spider is intelligent. It has the material, the thread, within itself. It produces it and it weaves. And for weaving, it requires legs. And some legs are called hands, some legs are called legs, like in our case. So it weaves, and so skillful. Any insect landing there, it may be a room wide net, spider's web. Instantaneously, wherever the spider is, it can get the vibrations. Food has landed and it goes. So, when we see creation, the creator is existing. This is the very first. So, the process of creation, any act of creation that proves the existence of the creator. But any act of creation must proceed through three stages. Janati ichchati kurute. What is it? First of all, janati. It must have knowledge. And in this Upanishad, in other Upanishads, this desire, this knowledge, that is called tapas. Tapas means, how do I want to create it? Knowledge. And peculiarly, it is also said that he has prepared a mould. Brahma, being very intelligent, he said, I have to do this for eternity. I am not going to waste my time thinking. So I will produce a mould, and every time creation, it becomes merged in me. It becomes indistinguishable. Nama, Rupa, Prayojana. Desha, Kala, Vastu. Time, space and causation. Everything becomes indistinguishably one. Then that material has to be poured into the mould. And because he was intelligent, he created this mould called this creation. And all that he needs to do is take the material, which is himself, and jump into that mould. And he becomes exactly a mosquito, a mice, man, mountain, everything. This is the idea. Yatha purvam akalpayat. Dhata yatha purvam akalpayat. Dhata means vidhata, means Brahma. How he did it? In the past. So because he is intelligent, he is the source of all intelligence. Because he is only Saraswati, he is only Gayatri, he knows. So he prepared once for all a mould. He himself became the mould. He himself became the material. He himself is the instrumental cause. And every time he withdraws this world, it all becomes avyakta, unmanifest namarupa. And next creation, he just manifests because he jumps into the mould like molten gold, falling into different moulds, becoming different ornaments. What a beautiful idea we are getting here. So to create anything, three things are necessary. First, knowledge is necessary, and that is termed here as austerity, tapasya. What is tapasya? Recollecting what he did in the past. Because if you have done something, suddenly you wake up, and it will take some time to recollect. Today, I am supposed to do these things. I have prepared a list of what I need to do today. And you have to look into that and start doing it. So, Brahma also, he did tapasya. He remembered what he did in the past creation. And exactly, yatha purvam akalpayat. How he did it in the past. So, first is knowledge. Then second is called tapasya, visualization. Third is ichchati, kriyate. So first knowledge, then he desires, I want to do this. That is how to do it. Kriyate, then he does the action. He knows what he wants to do. He wants to do and he does it. Janati, ichchati, kriyate. So this is the first reason. Whenever you see a product, there must be at least two causes, intelligent cause and material cause. That is the argument number one. Argument number two. So Brahman exists as the individual soul called Jivatma. What is the essence of this second argument? Who is thinking about whether Brahman exists or not? I am thinking. And I am a Jivatma. And I exist. How do I know I exist? Because if I don't exist, the question, I want to know who created this world, will not arise. An existing person alone knows about existence. So, what is a Jivatma? Existence manifesting as with name, form and a purpose is called Jivatma. Pure existence without a name, a form, a limitation, that is called Brahman. So, manifested Brahman is called universe or creation. Unmanifested creation is called Brahman. marvelous argument. So a Jivatma at some point of time attends these Taittiriya Upanishad classes, and then for his enlightenment a guru is awakening him. He says, you exist, and that which is existence, pure existence, Sat, without any name, form or purpose, that is called Brahma. So a tree exists, I exist, a mouse exists, a mice exist, man exists, mountain exists, everything exists, living as well as non-living, Jada and Chetana. You can't say, you can't experience a mountain unless it exists. Therefore, my existence as Jivatma, because I am asking the question, that proves I exist, that proves I am thinking. First comes what? I am so and so, I am thinking such and such, I want to do this. Before every action, what comes, whether it is expressed or not, I. Since I exist, and that I cannot come unless there is prior existence. And that is the argument to Brahman exists because I exist. Then what is the difference? I am limited, Brahman is unlimited. I am limited because the moment I see a second something, living or non-living, that limits me. That is, there is a tree, so the tree limits me, I limit the tree. Both are limited by each other. And there are uncountable objects in this world, living and non-living. How many trillions, jillions, God alone knows. So my existence definitely proves the existence of Brahman. Or to put it in a another way, maybe simple way, if the individual exists, the universal also exists, and that universal is called God or Brahman. So that is the second argument. Third argument is because, as we mentioned earlier, Brahman exists as the material cause, upadana karanam. Fourth argument is, Brahman is sukrutam. Sukrutam means punyam, whatever is done well, well done. And this word well done, a lot of meanings. So if somebody had done a cake very well done, somebody had prepared rice pudding, payasam, well done. Somebody made a sweetmeat, well done. That is one meaning. But here, Shankaracharya comes to our aid and says, Swayam Kritam. Swayam Kritam means what? That which is existing without any cause for its existence. I cannot exist without my parents. They can't exist without their parents. And if you take this argument to the last, God exists, pure existence is there, but you can't question what is the cause of the pure existence. Because if you say, two problems will come. First of all, if you say pure existence, the idea some impure existence is there, that also will come. So if you go on thinking pure existence is an effect, then what is the, it must have a cause, and that cause will be Brahman. If you say, and this argument becomes what they call ad infinitum, then what is the cause of Brahman? So X is the cause of Brahman. What is the cause of X? Why is the cause of Brahman? Why, what is the cause of Brahman called Y? Z is the cause of Brahman. So, the answer can never be given. That's why we have to say, pure existence is Brahman. So, it is called self-creator, means he is creating himself. He had created himself. That means he is eternally existent. And he is the original cause. That is the fourth argument. What is the fifth argument? Brahman as the source of joy. So this Upanishad particularly says, Yadvai tat sukrutam praso vai saha. So it says, whatever is made of itself, it is of the nature of rasa. Rasa means bliss. So that is the argument number 5. Brahman is the source of all joy. So when we reach Anandamaya Kosha, that is also an effect. Every effect must have a cause. And who is the cause? Brahma Puchyam Pratishtha. Pratishtha means the original cause, causeless cause, infinite cause, unborn cause, self-existent cause, all these words. So Brahman is the very cause of even this Anandamaya Kosha. Why do we say so? I already explained about it. What it means is that what is a kosha? That which stays for, is born, which was not before, which is born at a particular point of time, stays for a few moments or moment, everything is momentary, and then again it disappears. That which comes and goes, and it comes and goes because of certain reasons, it depends upon that which is limited, that which comes and goes, that which is temporary, that which is dependent, that is called a kosha. Simple argument. But Brahman is infinite. And every Anandamaya kosha also derives its most happiness or bliss only from this Brahman. That is why Brahman is called the source. Puchyam means source. Advaitat sukrutam raso vaisa is of the nature of ananda, sat, chit, ananda. But the sixth argument, Brahman as the enlivening principle. If Brahman is not existent, kohye vanyat, kah pranyat, adesha akasha anando nasyat. That is, if Brahman is not existent, nothing else can exist. And Brahman in the form of prana doesn't exist. In the form of akasha doesn't exist. Then nothing can exist. The first manifestation of Atman or Brahman, Atmana Akashaha Sambhutaha. That is the sixth argument. And the seventh and final argument, Brahman is the source of fear and also fearlessness. So that is why if somebody misbehaves, Brahman becomes a source of fear because punishment, stick will come. If everybody or anybody behaves properly, then that very Brahman becomes Ananda Swarupa, fearlessness. And if somebody is separate from Brahman, it becomes the cause of fear. Somebody becomes one with Brahman, he becomes a source of fearlessness. Because one statement of the Upanishad supports by the statement, another Upanishadic statement, Vitiyadvai Bhayam Bhavati. Always fear comes when there is a second one. I have money, that is a second one, I may lose my money. I have prana, I may lose my prana, that becomes a source of fear. I have joy, I am happy, but it's not to me, it has come from either a sweet or some dear object, but it comes and goes. I also come and go. So whenever there is a second, that becomes the source of fear. This is the seventh final clinching argument for to prove the existence of Brahman. Brahman is the source of both fear and fearlessness. So these seven reasons to prove the existence of Brahman is the central topic of the sixth Anuvaka in this second chapter called Brahmanandavalli of the Taittiriya Upanishad, which we will discuss in greater detail from next class onwards. I say from next class onwards because it is a profound chapter. Of all the chapters, the sixth chapter is the most profound. And we will have to try to, it is intellectually is also very challenging because such marvelous arguments are given, which we will talk about from next class onwards. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagadgurum Padapadme Tayo Sritva Pranamami Mohur Mohuhu. May Sri Ramakrishna Holy Mother and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with Bhakti. Hey Ramakrishna.